Last spring, Regina Perry and I were exploring what topic she might like me to address in the auction sermon that she had purchased in November. And yes, this is a quick plug for the annual brew auction. And I am again offering my words for sale. But I think that the value is, as the advertisement says, priceless. So bid early and often to be a winner. We were discussing a wide range of topics, and Regina eventually landed on the Universalist message of hope as the theme she would like to hear about. I decided that the month to schedule said sermon would be September, proximal to John Murray's arrival on the New Jersey shore in 1770. Last year, we heard about the birthday of American Universalism with that event. And this year, the Unitarian Universalist History and Heritage Society is celebrating the 250th anniversary year with a convocation in Baltimore in October. You could probably still sign up if you're interested. I'm looking forward to that, as well as an add-on overnight trip up to Murray Grove Retreat and Renewal Center in Lenoka Harbor to learn more about our Universalist roots. Regina remembered that there is a quote attributed to John Murray that is the basis for my sermon's title. The full quote includes courage as well. Peter Hughes, in his fall 2012 UU World article, "Who Really Said That?" explains that it is a misattribution several times over. If you would turn with me to number 704 in the back of the gray hymnal, you will find the full fictionalized words of John Murray with his name underneath. In 1951, Alfred S. Cole wrote a pamphlet titled Our Liberal Heritage, in which a fictional time spirit said these words to John Murray. In other words, John was not speaking. The time spirit said to John Murray, "Go out into the highways and byways of America, your new country. You may possess only a small light, but uncover it, let it shine, use it in order to bring more light and understanding to the hearts and minds of men and women. Give them not hell, but hope and courage. Do not push them deeper into their theological despair, but preach the kindness and everlasting love of God." Over the next six decades, the attribution of the quote reads like a game of telephone. First, UU minister and religious educator Henry H. Cheatham changes the speaker to John Murray from the time spirit. And then UU minister and historian Charles Howe names Cheatham as its source. Like the words of Methodist founder John Wesley, which are misattributed to 16th century Transylvanian Unitarian Francis David, give them not hell, but hope and courage, appear as UU bling in hymnody and on plaques, including at Murray Grove. Now that I've got that out of the way, we can focus on the theological message that undergirds these fictionalized words in our Universalist reality. You heard in our readings this morning that American Universalism arose as one response to the hellfire and brimstone preaching of the 18th century's Great Awakening. The major premise shared by almost all Universalist writers is that the benevolence of God precludes the possibility of endless punishment, writes David Robinson in The Unitarians and the Universalists. Thomas Whittemore's 1840 Plan Guide to Universalism defined Universalists very simply as those who believe in the eventual holiness and happiness of all the human race, as revealed to the world in the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. These were ideas shared with the Unitarians of the day and eventually made their way into mainline Protestant denominational theology as modernism and liberalism gained traction into the center from the fringes of the American religious landscape. As Reverend Wendy Fitting wrote, "Happiness is an essential value for Unitarian Universalists. Our spiritual ancestors embraced a mission to happify humanity with their message of God's love and universal salvation. They believed, and I believed, and I also believe, that happiness and goodness are intimately linked." From its earliest beginnings in Pennsylvania, before John Murray fled England to the American colonies, American Universalism emphasized the primacy of person, their intrinsic worth, their freedoms, and their possible high destiny. There was a Unitarian slogan used often in the early 19th century, "The progress of mankind onward and upward forever." Please excuse the dated language. It suggests that human beings are perfectible as they strive towards our grand notions and highest aspirations for creating heaven here on earth. Writing in the early 20th century, Clarence Skinner explained in his The Social Implications of Universalism, excuse me, that Universalism has not tried to abolish the scheme of suffering and punishment from life. It has not done away with moral accountability. The idea of hell and heaven is just as potent in the modern theology as in the old. They are essential elements in religion. Universalism has not abolished the idea of hell. It has humanized and socialized it. It has established human misery as the direct effect or consequences of human action. And Universalism has not only humanized and socialized hell, but it has humanized and socialized salvation. If a man must suffer the consequences of his own sin, he must likewise make his own reparation. We then make the road by walking it, to paraphrase Paulo Freire and Miles Horton, which leads me to hope and courage. To make our way in this world as human beings, there must be something that counters what some believe is also our inherent imperfection. We may be inherently worthy of respect that recognizes and honors the integrity of our selfhood, but that doesn't mean that we are perfect in our words and deeds. Nor does it mean that we aren't sometimes tempted to act solely in our own self-interest to the detriment of others. But I am hopeful that each of us has the capacity to learn and grow, to better our individual and collective natures in the cause of human unity. The theological ground of Universalism in our ability to create a better world for all gives me hope that we can work together to solve problems that arise in civil society. Gives me hope that we have learned so much, although we will continue to have a lot more to learn, about the world in which we live. Gives me hope. Yes, we human beings in our unending quest to comprehend the natural order of things have wound up doing a great deal of damage to our ecosystems. However, when we recognize and face the reality of environmental issues and injustice, as well as social, political, and economic injustice, we can and do turn the trajectory around. We have done this. We have made significant improvements to the quality of air, water, and soil in our own lifetimes. This gives me hope. When our young people speak out about gun violence and the effects of human-enhanced climate change, I am hopeful at the same time that I feel anger and disappointment that we are even having these debates. I am hopeful. Unitarian Universalism has instilled in me hope for a better tomorrow by working daily to make the world a better place for all. Knowing that if I wish to experience heaven, I need to create it in the here and now, in the eternal present, is part of that larger hope that all Universalists have envisioned over the course of human history. And that's Universalists with a small U as well as a big U. We aren't the only ones who have this theology now or in the past, but we are people who have made this central to who we are and what our worldview is. This isn't an armchair sort of activity. This is hope as an action word. This is hope that is woven into social action and creating social justice. This is hope that calls out racism and white supremacist culture. This is hope that is bound up in simple small acts, like stopping to pick up someone else's trash when we're out hiking along a trail in a public park, or helping those in need of food, clothing, and shelter. This is hope that makes personal choices that have public implications, like buying an electric hybrid car, or biking or walking to work instead of driving. This is hope that delivers support in the form of caring words or visits, hope that soothes pain and desperation, hope that sits quietly while someone tells a difficult story or sheds tears. This is the hope that I felt this morning when I started out on my way to church. And I felt the air, and it was soft and gentle in its temperature and its humidity. And I said to myself, oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I have a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. If you were there, you heard me. We all need more hope in our lives. I heard an interview by Krista Tippett with the poet and writer Jericho Brown in early June. Speaking to Brown about his piece entitled My Credo, Tippett said, "So, one thing I feel about the world right now is there's a scarcity. There's a fragility to hope right now. I experience a lot of people saying, it's hard to know what you do, what I do can make a difference. Although it feels like there's so much we want to change. I want to read something you wrote in that credo. You said, hope is always accompanied by the imagination, the will to see what our physical environment seems to deem impossible. Only the creative mind can make use of hope. Only a creative people can wield it." I think I'll read that part again. It got repeated in the interview because he was so surprised that he had written that. And he was like, oh, wow, that's really good. Hope is always accompanied by the imagination. You will see what the will to see what our physical environment seems to deem impossible. Only the creative mind can make use of hope. Only a creative people can wield it. How can we strengthen our hope at this time? Maybe we need to think about hope like an acorn, the seed of a strong and mighty oak tree that stands by the water and is not moved. A friend of mine, Martha Dallas, talks about the role of imagination in our engagement with hope in a very accessible way. She's a religious educator. The following is from a lesson she wrote. Like acorns, our hope needs other things to come to life. First, we start with our imaginations. We imagine that thing we're hoping for. take a moment to close your eyes and imagine something you hope for. Go ahead, close your eyes a moment. Imagine something that you hope for. Your hopes are like acorns. They just need a little work, care, action, help, and luck to ever really come to life, like an acorn becomes an oak tree. And one important question, could you ever have an oak tree without first having an acorn? No. The same way every great thing anyone's ever done began with hope, with someone's imagination of what could be, plus action to help it grow to life. That's the power of hope. I want all of you to remember to engage your imaginations when we share our hopes with each other this year during our work of creating a vision statement for Brew. And you'll hear more about that next Sunday, as well as in the months to come. The combination of imagination and hope sounds like dreaming. Dreaming into the future, dreaming who we want to be and what we want to do in our lives. Dreaming world community with justice and equity for all. Dreaming a planet transformed by our care. Do you have the heart, the courage to embody your hope and move us towards these dreams? We are responsible for our own salvation. We are responsible for being worthy of the love that is already promised to us. The gift of love makes its requirements, wrote Wendy Fitting. Being loved fosters hope in the human psyche. It makes the whole world appear sweeter and more beautiful. Everything is possible. Everything is hope-filled. We matter. We can help someone else feel like they matter. We can give them the gift of hope, the gift of love. The gift of love requires us to make a difference in the lives of our fellow human beings. Each of us can, especially if we carry hope and courage in our hearts. In a world without end, may it be so.